Hello once again. Good morning to those on the West Coast. Good afternoon to those on the East Coast. Good evening to those further east of there. Welcome back to another Trino Community Broadcast. As always, my name is Cole Bowden. I'm joined by Mr. Manfred Moser. Manfred, you've got a pretty exciting episode today talking about a very cool thing being added to Trino.
Yeah, we got some hardcore geeks on board today. David Phillips and Matt Stevenson, both long-term developers with a lot of experience. Hats off to you both. That are going to join us and talk about a pretty complicated topic that's very interesting and called open telemetry.
Yeah, and there's a lot to go into that. I actually am almost intentionally a little underinformed, so I can represent an audience here and ask some questions. But before we get to that, we also have some other stuff to talk about, Manfred, including but not limited to Trino releases.
Yeah, 3 weeks later from last episode, and we already have two more releases. That's pretty damn good. And there is some significant stuff in there. In fact, I think some would call this a major achievement, and we're probably going to blog about it more. It's been very much celebrated already. That Snowflake connector that has been in the works for, I don't want to know exactly, but I'm like, say, want to say 2 years or something?
It's at least a year and then some change for sure. So
yeah, and it has been an amazing collaboration between Eric from Bloomberg and Tang from 4Pass and Yuya and others from the Trino and Starburst team reviewing and getting it in and finally landed. So I think that's going to be super useful to have as a migration tool, federation tool to query your Snowflake account and then move it into Iceberg or query it in parallel and whatever else. So super awesome feature.
Yep. On top of that, we have some more run-of-the-mill changes. So support for subqueries inside unnest clauses. Row filtering and column masking when using Open Policy Agent. And then improve latency when you have file system caching enabled. So caching was added very recently, still being improved and iterated on. So it's only going to get better. It's a pretty big update, worth doing. 441 has a pretty substantial change as well if you're using the Hive connector. There was this legacy security mode on that connector, which is now gone. You can't use it anymore if you upgrade to 441.
Yeah, and in fact, noting that one was the default. And if you wanted to do things like dropping table, you had to have a bunch of properties set to true. All of those will now break your setup. So it's going to be allow all by default, which is really cool and makes a lot more sense. So thanks for that cleanup, David, by the way. I think it's going to be really beneficial for the community once they migrate to it. But don't migrate just yet, because especially if you're using Iceberg, there's a teeny regression. We're going to cut another release today.
Yeah, so with Iceberg, there's going to be... What was the exact issue with it? Hold on. I'm going to go... Oh, it's just a regression with the connector. File statistics domain are having issues, so...
Yeah, and it's only hit 440. So if you haven't upgraded yet beyond 430-something... just wait another day and then go to 442. But yeah, super awesome. I also wanted to mention that the Open Policy Agent is kind of cool because it just landed like two releases ago as a new feature. And now we already have like additional features again. So that's really nice. Great, great progress. And now we're going to introduce our guests. Matt and, David.
David and Matt in this order instead.
All right, cool. Let's go. Thank you for joining us today, Matt and David. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
We'll start with Matt. He's on the left.
Okay. All
right. I can see which one.
My name is Matt Stevenson. I work at Starburst Data, where I am a software engineer there. I also head a lot of the infrastructure initiatives. So, observability has been kind of like a major focus of mine at Starburst. Outside of that, for fun, I go and build the man for Burning Man, that behind me, and I fly planes.
Cool. So you flew out of the mud that was this year?
I did, actually.
nice work.
Directly from Burning Man to a set of meetings in San Jose with a lot of other Starburst folks. I flew actually another one of our employees off of the plane as well.
Nice work. Well, let's hope it's like less muddy next year. All right, David, what about you? Everyone knows you already, but just like quick recap.
Yeah, hi, I'm Div Phillips. I'm one of the co-creators of Trino. Been working on Trino since 2012. So, yeah, it's been a long ride. We've done a lot of interesting stuff, and it's amazing that the project has grown so much and we have such a huge community.
Yeah, and talking about huge community and news, you are now also being appointed as the dedicated file system lead. What does that mean, David?
Yeah, so in the beginning, we had the Hive connector. It connected to Hadoop HDFS. It used the Hadoop file system APIs. It used like all the Hive code to read different file formats. We ended up writing a S3 implementation on top of the Hadoop file system APIs, later added like implementations for like GCS and Azure using the official Hadoop file system libraries for those. And then we later added Iceberg, Delta Lake, and Hoodie, and all of those also used Hadoop file system APIs. So we had like all this code in Trino for all the different object storage systems using the Hadoop APIs, and those were pretty terrible. So because they were like built, you know, they were built like 20 years ago. They were designed for HDFS, so they didn't really work well with how like object storage systems work. They've all like the API surface is huge. You don't really know what things are like, what methods are going to work or exactly how they're going to be implemented in different file system implementations. So a couple years ago, we started a project to rip out the Hadoop file system APIs and create new file system APIs in Trino with like new native implementations and then re-implement all the file system readers and all the connector code on top of those. And so we finally got that project done. And now you can run Trino without any Hadoop code. Hadoop is actually only loaded if you ask for it as a config. But otherwise, like you don't have Hadoop on the class path at all.
And the developers get a clean API to work with that you designed, right?
Exactly, yeah. And so the problem is that we need to enforce like this vision of having like very clean, focused APIs that are implementable on all the different object storage systems. And so we don't want to just have lots of random stuff added to the API, because like that's the easy thing to do is you're like, oh, I need to solve this problem. Like, let me just go add like one new method to the file systems, like for this one thing I'm doing. Like, we want to make sure that like they're clean and they're focused and they work well across everything. And so like my job as the file system lead is to ensure that happens.
So that like any implementation details from like underlying file systems, like, I don't know, Hadoop or like, I don't know, like even Delta Lake or Hoodie or Iceberg doesn't bubble up and has a custom switch or something like that, right?
Exactly. A good example of this recently is in the old S3 implementation for Hive, like we had a feature for skipping files in Amazon Glacier. And I was like, okay, well, how do we do this? Because it's kind of like one of those, it's a feature that breaks the abstractions. And so I had to think about like, how can we add this to the file system APIs in a clean way that lets us implement this feature for users, but doesn't like add this very, very specific API in there that's only for like S3. And that's only for the Hive connector as well.
Cool. And now users can use that already, right? Like we updated the docs a bit together and people can use the new file system APIs indirectly by using those new native file systems, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're working on making those the default as well and continuing to improve the documentation on there. So thanks, Manfred.
I try. Thanks, man. All right, cool. And then also exciting news. It is now only 5 days away that Java 22 is landing. And what are we doing with that?
Yeah, so we're switching to Java 22 as soon as possible. Like there's lots of nice new features and APIs and also some preview APIs in Java 22 that we want to use. And so we want to get Trino on a cadence where we can be upgrading to the latest Java basically as soon as it comes out. Because Java is on a 6-month release train. Like Java 22 comes out in March, 23 comes out 6 months in next September, October, and like so on. And so every 6 months, they're adding lots of new stuff to Java, and we want to always be able to take advantage of those features.
Yeah, especially also for Project Hummingbird, right? Like there's some really interesting things. And even like in the last couple of updates, like we went to Java 21, like multi-line strings and things that are like really simple make a huge impact on making the code base cleaner and easier to read. So It's really awesome. And of course, hopefully we get some more contributors that are interested in playing with Java 22 on a like full on big software, not just some toy implementation. So that's really cool.
Yeah, with Java 8 still in so many places, being on Java 22 means you get a lot of modern features. I mean, this is relative to 21 where we are right now, but it's still like night and day between like Java 8 where you still don't even have lambdas and where we are now. So
yeah, call out, by the way, my son is at UBC now and they're still like on Java 11 or something like that. I'm like, let's get on with this over there on the universities too. Cool. Yeah, no, so that's super exciting. Another thing that's also been really cool is that Yuya has been working really hard and has managed to convince a couple of friends of his in Japan and a publisher to get this happening. Look how cool this looks. Chino the Definitive Guide in Japanese. So that is available for everyone now. So now we have a Chinese, a Polish, an English, and a Japanese version. So really, thank you for all that work, Yuya. Hopefully the community in Japan can appreciate and find this useful. And obviously we also have a Slack channel for native speakers that allows them to communicate on an easier level, right? Like English isn't my first language either. So I don't necessarily hang out often on a German channel, but like I totally understand how sometimes things are just easier in your native language. And that's a good thing. And then last but not least, we have a Trino contributor call scheduled again for the 21st of March. So please reach out or take the invite. We're going to talk about the test guide, Java 22 and other things. Anything that anyone wants to talk about in terms of their PRs or work and having to really technical questions on that call on the 21st of March. And now Matt is going to tell us what OpenTelemetry even is.
Yeah, so OpenTelemetry is a open source project that kind of spawned out of it's kind of like a long lineage of projects that eventually converged into OpenTelemetry. You've got OpenTracing, you have Zipkin, kind of in the early days. Those are kind of like your tracing components. Like some of the big, which is a lot of like the big, I think, improvement to Trino that's the most recent big improvement to observability in Trino. And then you have OpenMetrics, which is a spec that kind of evolved out of Prometheus. And that spec got absorbed into the OpenCensus project. And then that kind of got pulled together into OpenTelemetry. And then there's also kind of like an events and logging component to OpenTelemetry as well. As a whole, the project encompasses like a standard for traces, metrics, and logging. And it kind of, you know, has like various, it has support for all three of those. I think over time, we're looking at trying to make sure that we support all of those. But at this moment, the big thing is like, you know, getting traces, OpenTelemetry traces.
Right, I have to ask a super dumb question. What is a trace even, and what the hell is it used for?
So a trace is simply just like a collection of metadata and associated with like a temporal record that gives you like the time that it takes for a certain thing to occur within code, right? It has a start and end time or a start and a duration, and it has a series of metadata attached to it. And there's a hierarchy or a linkage between traces and spans so that you can kind of see, you know, various inner workings of your code and how long those things take to
execute. So what's a span then?
A span is, you can kind of, I'm going to get this messed up. But a trace is kind of like the higher level concept, and a span is kind of like a little bit of that duration inside of a trace.
Okay, and where okay, that's cool. So it's kind of like a fancy log that like gets spit out into the ether, and then telemetry is like a standard for that.
Yes, it's a standard for defining it's the API for actually creating traces and spans, and then also the standard for transporting those traces and spans over the wire using gRPC.
Cool. There's a front end engineer who's familiar with HTML saying, "I know what a span is right now."
Yeah.
difference, man.
Yeah, it also encapsulates something, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, we're using it to mean a similar but very different thing.
So where did this, like, why did we think this is a good idea to add to Trino?
Technically, David added it to Trino, so I'll let him in his wisdom. But I think that, I think they're great.
Yeah. So, it was thanks to Matt. So Matt had set up a Datadog at Starburst for some internal stuff. And like Datadog was one of those products, like I'd never used an observability product like that before. And like, once I saw it, I was like, well, this is amazing. Like
this is the bomb.
It's one of those classes of tools that once you see it, like you just have to use it everywhere. And so like OpenTelemetry, it was finally like a good API that we could put into Trino. Like we kind of been talked about doing tracing for years, but it was never clear like what API or how should we integrate in the code. And it was finally like OpenTelemetry just seemed to be in a state where like, yeah, we can just integrate this and it'll be fine. We don't need to worry about all the different things you had to worry about with like previous generations of libraries.
OpenTelemetry is like pretty standard, right? Widely used. It's from the Cloud Native Compute Foundation as well, isn't it? So there's a lot of like supporting software, like you mentioned, Datadog supports it. I think there's one called Jaeger or whatever. That's like a bit of a UI. There's probably others as well, I'm guessing, but I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, it's pretty ubiquitous in the industry. Like majority of like observability providers allow you to, you know, push to almost directly to their endpoints. That early vend specialized collectors that take care of authentication, things like that, that you can run right next to Trino. That's kind of how we do it at Starburst.
Why is tracing useful in Trino? Like Trino is a distributed system. You run a query, it's going to run on multiple machines. It's going to go talk to various backends. Like it might talk to like S3, it talks to Hive Metastore or AWS Glue, or it talks to Azure, or different connectors talk to like different backends. And so you want to know when you're running a query, like, why is this query slow, or like, where are the slow parts, or like just general performance metrics, like what happened where when I was running this. And so tracing lets you instrument all the code and see exactly like, okay, how long did I spend planning the query? How long did I spend in each optimizer? How long did I spend making various metadata calls? How long did I spend reading data from S3, right? Like, and you just get to see like a waterfall of like all those things throughout the entire query.
So it's like a project plan, but actually what happened.
Exactly. And it can be very detailed. Like you can see like just high level stuff. You can also see like very detailed down to like individual calls to S3.
So with this knowledge, we can do what? Optimize better, upgrade the hardware that's the bottleneck? All of the above?
Yeah, all of the above. Like it really gives you information about like what's going on when you run this query. Because before you just kind of look at it and you just kind of have to guess, or you'd have to have like look at various metrics in like different places, and like tracing just gives you like, just tells you exactly what's going on.
So,
and it's also turned out to be useful in development as well. Like we had a test that would want to test performance characteristics of the code. Like, okay, when we do this operation, how many backend Metastore calls do we make? Like exactly which Metastore calls? Because it's very easy to introduce things where maybe you accidentally call it in a loop, or you have some extra calls in there, and those can be a performance hit. And so we'd have these like special wrappers that would be kind of like tracing, where they'd instrument like, this is how many calls we made to this method, this is how many calls we made to this method, and we'd have all these assertions in the code to verify it. But when you get to do that for everything, it's kind of a mess, and it's kind of wasted work because it's only for testing. And now with tracing, we can just rip all that out, and we can actually use the same tracing code that we use in production and just verify those performance characteristics and tests. So both like you get rid of code and you know that you're actually using the same tracing code that you're using in production. So you know that the tracing code works correctly.
Cool. So like when you decided to pull this into Trino, like obviously you pulled in the dependency or whatever that makes the format, and then how did you decide how to sprinkle it across the code base? Like, I mean, Trina is huge and there's lots of moving parts. Like, are you just like, oh yeah, a little bit of planner here, a little bit of optimizer there, and these connectors, a little bit of sugar? Like how where is that at, and what did you decide is important to emit these traces?
Yeah, so part of it was just judgment, just having an idea of like, okay, these things seem interesting. So you have you have a trace, and a trace like will start, there'll be one trace for the entire query. So the entire query, like everything inside the query goes into a single trace. And then you have spans that break down the different operations. So like, it's kind of obvious, like, okay, we're going to have like one span for planning, one span for generating splits. We'll have spans for execution, right? And those are pretty high level. And then inside of that, you're like, okay, well, we're doing some planning. Like, what's interesting in planning, or like, what do I think might take more time? So then you just add like another level of tracing inside that span. And then you have that span. If you kind of look at a span and like, that span takes a long time, or like you kind of like, when you're looking at it, you're like, okay, well, this took 20 milliseconds here. What might have happened inside of there, right? Like, I don't know, because I don't have any more detailed information. And you break that down and you add some more spans inside of it. And you just kind of like keep going until the spans get so granular that they're not interesting, or that there's just too many of them to look at.
So like, I wrote the documentation for this, and like, you have to enable it. So if I add this quickly to, for people that want to play with it, you just configure tracing is true. You set the endpoint where it goes. And if people want to play with it, they can use this example and follow through with Docker. But my question is, so how do you decide when to enable it? Like, is there like, what's the overhead, or like, isn't it gonna be like throwing stuff out like crazy everywhere to like produce a lot of traffic? Is that like, how bad is it, so to speak? Right? You know, it's a bit like logging, right? Like, don't switch on debug logging for everything, because it's gonna like spill over in your logs like crazy. Is that a consideration for tracing or not so much? Or
Yeah, absolutely. So like, this is an area that probably needs more work on our side, and it also kind of depends on your environment. So like right now, we only have a way to turn on tracing in Trino globally at the server level. And there's no way to like turn it on or off at runtime. So if you turn it on, you're getting the fire hose of like just everything going to your observability endpoint. And so potentially you could do sampling at the observability, like at the system that's ingesting the events. You can also, so we support, there's a standard way to propagate a trace from a client to a server. So the Trino client support, or the Trino, like this Trino server endpoint for clients, it supports this trace propagation. And there's actually like a standard header that you could use to turn off tracing. And so potentially, like, depending on how you're submitting queries, you could turn them on or off on a query basis.
Oh, like, is that through a JDBC driver or the CLI or both, or like just part of the payload basically?
Yes. Well, ostensibly, it's not implemented yet in those, but it could be.
Cool. By the way, shout out to Jan who chimed in. He mentioned that the OpenTelemetry webpage has a good page about concepts. And yes, that's what I used as a motivation to query Matt, because I didn't know all these things, but Detail and I benefited from that page very well. And yeah, I'll be linking it into the show notes. And then other question also that Jan mentioned is, it might be worth talking about which clients propagate traces. And I think when he means clients, he talks about like the JDBC driver, the CLI or whatever comes in. But I think it's kind of also interesting on the other side, right? Like, you mentioned S3, but like, what about like something going down to like, I don't know, via the JDBC driver to Postgres? Like, can Postgres emit these kind of traces as well? Or like?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know if we propagate through the connectors all the time, but you can definitely, there's a standard for propagating traces over the wire that we actually leverage at Starburst to be able to propagate traces in and out of Trinos that we're running in our SaaS product. And we have a test environment that can actually propagate those traces starting all the way from the JDBC client, or from the Python client, I think, actually. So.
Cool. So that's something we're looking at adding more, like in the different connectors or something like that, potentially, if there's interest?
Yeah, I would say so.
I don't know. This is a good area for community contributions. Like when I worked in it, I kind of instrumented the core of Trino and the parts that I thought were interesting. And then I instrumented like S3 and like, I think the Hive Metastore and like a few places like that, that like is more like kind of just showing how it's done in like part, like in places that I personally found interesting, but there's lots of connectors to be done. Like you said, like the Postgres connector, we don't have it. So like if you're using the Postgres connector and like you want tracing, like that'd be a great thing to contribute.
So how hard is it to do that? Like is it like 100 lines of code, 12 lines of code, or one line of code, like to switch it on, so to speak? Like
it kind of depends on if the client that you're using like has tracing support, like OpenTelemetry built in, or if there's a there's an OpenTelemetry integration you can plug in. Like for example, adding it to S3 was I don't know, maybe like 10 lines of code in the right place to hook into their stuff and like add the OpenTelemetry tracing, because the S3 client already supports that. Same is true for like Azure and GCS. Like they already support tracing, so it was like pretty easy to hook it in. Like
if the so
it's more like just researching how do I enable tracing for like this system that I'm talking to using the Java client or using the Trino.
So with Postgres, if we talk about that as an example, you would have to look if the PostgreSQL JDBC driver supports it and how you pass that trace in, and then it would have to deal with the rest of the chain, basically.
Exactly. And there might be other places like in Trino code itself that we want to add tracing for. And like that is just ends up being usually a few lines of code in each place. Often like it can end up being a whole lot of boilerplate because like you want to pass different attributes. Like for example, the connector metadata APIs, the tracing is probably, I don't know, it's like several hundred lines long at least. Because like we want to instrument, like if you're making a metadata call to like fetch information about this table, we'll pass in like the catalog, schema, and table name, right? So like with the trace, and like for every single call, we're passing in lots of attributes about exactly what you're doing so that the traces are pretty detailed and you can kind of see exactly what was going on. And so that can end up being like pretty verbose, but like it's very straightforward. It's just a lot of code.
Cool. Well, hopefully the listeners and the community can send some PRs to make that even more powerful. And then we can have some more successes in from like practical experience. Maybe tell us a bit what you've been using this for. Like, where has it been useful? Like, are there some tips and tricks, or can you show us something? How's it been working? I mean, you talked about local development, but you also mentioned production. Like, how's that going?
Oh. Matt, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, sure. We actually use it pretty extensively at Starburst for across the entire platform, but definitely to be able to figure out what's going on like within Trino and how it's interacting with our systems in the SaaS product space. So I actually have like, I can kind of show off a little bit of one of our traces if you want, which might be helpful to kind of
talk. That'd be super interesting. Let's go.
Yeah, go ahead. All right. So this is kind of like a pretty involved trace. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to find one that starts all the way from the client. Jan probably could. It's kind of going through several of our internal systems. As you can see,
what are we looking here at? Like, what is that UI?
This is Datadog. This is their tracing UI. So a lot of different there's a lot of different vendors out there in the observability space. We chose Datadog at Starburst, but I think there's other, you can definitely get similar interfaces to work in like other vendors. And you can get this kind of look and feel as well within the open source community with Jaeger. But just kind of zooming in a little bit here, you can kind of see, this is only like 1.6 seconds, but you can see we're going through like several internal services here, going through kind of like our security layer. We were just talking about Postgres, and actually we do have like, the Postgres driver does support OpenTelemetry out of the box, so it's probably not a big lift for the community. Here you can see these green spans are actually Trino itself. So we kind of go from our internal infrastructure over to Trino.
I'm sorry, why did you mention Postgres now?
Oh, we were just chatting about the Postgres driver, right?
I know, but like, why is Postgres there?
That's actually our internal database that we have for our SaaS product. So it's not Trino calling Postgres, but this is actually our internal services that Trino interfaces with in our SaaS platform that then persist data within Postgres.
So like some configuration in Starburst Galaxy that like what client you are and like whatever, what clusters you have, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Or like how like users and roles, things like that. And you, as you can see, like as David was saying, you can get incredibly detailed here. So you can see we've got individual tasks. We've got, UI gets a little ornery when you've got this many traces, but you can see that you've got tasks broken out. You've got a remote task. So this is all like doing RPC. This is, doing REST calls between, I think this is actually all within a single coordinator on this, but this is all running on a single node Trino installation, but you'd be able to see like through this, if I pulled up the right trace, you could see where we're where Trino is calling back to itself. And of course you get a whole bunch of metadata on all of these traces. So you can see like for a given task, you can see like all sorts of very detailed metadata that gives you like the, you know, like we actually have a whole bunch of additional orchestration or additional instrumentation within the OpenTelemetry collector that adds a bunch of like additional metadata onto these traces so that we know like where this is coming from, what pod it's coming from, what Kubernetes cluster, where in the world it's running. So there's a whole lot that comes out of this that's incredibly valuable. If this doesn't have any errors on it, but in the UI, you'll actually see if there's like an exception that's thrown within the context of a span, that exception will show up as well within the span. And if you propagate exceptions, they'll kind of show up in every span that they've propagated through.
So and it's all green because it's all on one coordinator Trino, basically. But if there's like multiple, would they show up in different colors? So you would know like this node does that kind of stuff?
It's possible to do that. The way that we have things kind of like organized, we kind of have Trino, all of the Trino traces are kind of like organized under a single category. So they would all show up as green. All of the other, everything else you see is other traces within our infrastructure, or other spans within our infrastructure. So, you know, this is like kind of the front door. We've got security checks. We've got additional security checks here. This is all like Trino internal running the query itself.
So like when all these lines are like on top of each other stacked, like where they are, like where all the green stuff is on the right there, that means they are doing, it's doing all these things in parallel, right?
Correct. So this is like, over time. So this is time domain right here. So it's like you've got, you know, the request comes in the front door and then it kind of kicks off inside of Trino. Of course, like right after Trino accepts the query, we come back and respond back and say like, oh, go to this to get the result, go here to get the results. But just you like, so at this point, this is where like, this is the actual endpoint that a Starburst customer would hit to try to run a query. And when this returns back, they're getting a reference to go back and get results later. So this is, at the end of this V1 statement, you've already gotten, you made one put request down to Trino, but the query is gonna run asynchronously after that, right? It's gonna continue running. And then later on, there's another trace that you could go find that would have the, you know, the actual retrieval of results.
So question, how much of a performance hit does adding all of this tracing do? Like, are we adding milliseconds or less than that or more than that? Like, how much are we paying to have all of this insight if we're enabling this on a cluster?
I mean, on the Galaxy, like the overall, like it doesn't have much of an impact on any of the Trinos. It doesn't appear to have any impact on Trino running inside of Starburst. And I believe that a part of that is because we're very careful about where we run the OpenTelemetry collectors and how reliable we make sure that is. Because when a span closes, the span processor will immediately make a gRPC call to an OpenTelemetry collector. And if that infrastructure is unreliable, or overloaded, then you can have those API calls kind of like take longer and eat up threads and eat up time on the machine doing retries.
So network wise, that collector has to be close and like really good performance basically, and not like so.
Yeah, we run like high availability, multiple collectors, and they're all within the same. We run kind of a hierarchy of collectors so that, you know, the traces get off of, the traces can be pushed to a collector very quickly. The spans can be pushed to a collector very quickly.
Cool. And David, you mentioned before that it can be enabled sort of like via like a not yet exposed kind of hack from the client. So is it always enabled on the clusters, or is it basically by default now disabled and then you switch it on when you're like, oh, this is something going wrong, we need to look?
So if you turn on tracing in Trino, you set the trace enabled equals true. It's always enabled. And then you could disable it on a per trace or like a per query request by setting the appropriate like trace state header when you submit the query from the client. Yeah, but as to the overhead, like it's going to be a slight amount of CPU. Like I'm sure it's like less than 1%. Like it's very minor. And most of the places where we add tracing are things that are calling out to an external system. So like if you're going to go make an HTTP request to like S3 or some, you know, you're going to like call Postgres or something, right? Like those network, like the overhead of doing a network request is like very high relative to like the minor amount of overhead you're adding for tracing.
Okay, cool.
Like we don't add tracing. Like if you add it, if you're doing so much tracing that tracing was using noticeable resources, like you would be tracing way too much. Mm-hmm. Like, and you would have just way too many traces as well.
So maybe we need to dedicate you as the tracing placement lead as well. So when we send pull requests in, people don't just sprinkle the traces everywhere.
It's about the being deliberate rather than just, you know, you don't want to be the undergrad engineer who's debugging by adding print statements every third line.
Yeah, tracing is about usually like figuring out what's going on in different components, often in like distributed components. Like it's not about like tracing is not like CPU profiling or sampling. Like there's other tools for that, like JFR. Tracing is more about telling you like, I ran a query, it did all this stuff across all these machines and all these backend services. Like, what happened?
So when you come to measurements, Matt, you also mentioned that there's also open metrics involved and you like added that as well to Trino. So but how is that different from or like related to open telemetry?
Yeah, so open metrics is kind of a protocol on top of like a library that's existed inside of Trino and Airlift for a long time, which is JMX Utils, which Martin wrote. And what OpenMetrics does is it provides like kind of first-class support to Trino to expose the OpenMetrics standard endpoint, which is similar to what you would find like if you were to add like the Prometheus client libraries per se to like your code, like start exposing metrics to a Prometheus collector. So you can, I think there's no need to enable anything. You can just go ahead and tie a Prometheus directly into Trino. And if you were to just like go run the development server on your own or run Trino on your own, and you go curl the slash metrics endpoint, you can see the open metrics results. It's kind of what it ultimately does is it makes things a lot simpler than having to run the Prometheus JMX sidecar. Like if you're running this in Kubernetes or in Docker, we found that actually like introduces at times decent amount of overhead. You're basically having to use like it under the covers uses like RMI to talk over the wire, which is like not really between containers, which is not really great. So this, you know, really just kind of simplifies that, saves a lot of memory, saves a lot of RPC calls, whatever. It makes it so that you're just doing the fetch directly to Trino instead of to some additional process, which is then doing another RPC to Trino. So, and it will hopefully, like, over time, we'll be able to make sure that we standardize the metric naming, because kind of like one of the problems with running that Prometheus sidecar is that it depends on how you configure it, what the metric naming kind of comes out as, right? So if two people have that running in different, with different Trino installations, you could end up with different metrics, and then you can't really share dashboards or other other artifacts like that, alerts, things like that. So yeah, we did that at I built that mostly to like make it really seamless for us to integrate Trino with the rest of the observability stack at Starburst, but made sure that it was like part of the community. It's actually a part of Airlift, so if you build your Java application on top of the Airlift framework, you'll get that basically for free. The tracing is also built directly into Airlift, so if you were to just go write your Java app in Airlift, you get that for free.
We still have to do that on a Trino gateway. Just, yeah. You know, then we get all that stuff for free.
Yeah, that's like Drop Wizard based.
It's Drop Wizard at the moment. Yeah. It's like legacy, sort of like from ages ago. We want to move over, but we have to figure out how to do that first.
Yeah, I remember in my past when I was working on Oracle Cloud, at Oracle, we used Drop Wizard as kind of our standard application container, and we had to bolt the like Prometheus, the Prometheus sidecar onto every single app that was running, every single service that was running. And like, if you summed up the memory of all those sidecars across the entire cloud, it was like, it could get into the terabytes. It was tons of those little tiny services everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, you can just go, I guess you, as an organization, could pay a bunch of money to run that extra sidecar for all that memory, or you could just, you know, call it directly now. In Trino, you can configure, there's a little bit of configuration that you can do with the OpenMetrics endpoint to expose metrics that aren't necessarily known to JMX Utils. So JMX Utils is kind of like, if you're looking in the code, it's that app managed annotation that is kind of in a lot of places. So you could, there is a possibility that there's metrics in JMX that are not necessarily exposed or aware, like JMX Utils is not aware of those metrics. And so those you can actually get at with some custom config that allows you to specify specific JMX object names that and object name patterns that will expose those additional metrics on the slash metrics endpoint. It also helps with like certain connectors being able to get metrics out of those.
So open, like explain that then. Prometheus is kind of like the standard application for the metrics, and OpenMetrics came out of it as a standard, and now it's kind of like a really good tool to look at those endpoints. Is that how it works, kind of?
Yeah, I think that's really close. I would say that Prometheus is kind of the original open source project that a lot of this technology came about for OpenMetrics, and like really spurred that standard along. OpenMetrics itself looks pretty close. It's not identical to the Prometheus standard. But Prometheus is interoperable with OpenMetrics. And OpenMetrics is kind of like trying to get to a more open standard that's not necessarily a part of the Prometheus open source project itself. So a whole lot of different observability platforms support OpenMetrics. You can use like the Datadog cluster agent to scrape them. You can use Chronosphere supports them. Supports it. There's a whole lot of different vendors out there that support OpenMetrics as a kind of a standard protocol.
And it's kind of funny because we now have sort of two sort of like infinite loops in a way. Like you can expose metrics in Trino, pump them into Prometheus, and then you can use the Prometheus Trino collector to query those metrics with Trino and SQL. Yep. And you can do the same with the JMX stuff. You can also use the JMX connector to use SQL to query that stuff. So Trino is kind of the UI for interrogating that stuff as well.
But Manfred, what if we traced the queries where we're querying Prometheus and then queried Prometheus to check our tracing of it?
It's a loop. It's like turtle
all the way down. You can go full Ouroboros.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. So And yes, I will add the documentation for the stuff. I will extract even more knowledge out of Matt and put that together. There is no documentation for the metrics input just yet, but it is coming.
Yeah, and at Starburst, we're actually exposing a subset of those metrics for the trainer clusters. So it's something where you can actually just run your own Prometheus and scrape your cluster that we're running for you, your trainer cluster that Starburst Galaxy is running for you.
So Matt, a question that I've had is why open metrics versus open telemetry metrics?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I have strong opinions about the pull versus push metrics, which is kind of the biggest reason to go for open metrics versus open telemetry. Open telemetry's metrics implementation is really powerful in terms of so its protocol is gRPC. It does a push of metrics data across the wire. So from the perspective of a running application, if you were to utilize the OpenTelemetry metrics protocol, it would push gRPC messages to a collector, and then that collector would push those metrics, say, to another observability platform or to a metrics store. The benefit of OpenMetrics is that you don't necessarily have to rely on the application itself to push those metrics. It's a pull metric, a pull protocol. So you can still utilize the OpenTelemetry collector and configure it for OpenMetrics instead of, it'll always listen for OpenTelemetry metrics, but you can configure it to scrape a metrics endpoint on a service, which then puts the ownership of ensuring that a regular timely update of that telemetry data happens from the collector itself, which is a much easier thing to monitor and track than having to make sure all of your application code everywhere is running and not necessarily blocked on some other thread or running out of CPU and unable to actually do that RPC call for the metrics time series. So you can regularly pull that slash metrics endpoint and collect all of those that time series data. There's some interest, I think, that to utilize to make sure that that's always a high priority endpoint. I've had some conversations with folks about using Jetty QoS to make sure that it's always available kind of thing. But I think that there's probably some more chatting we should do before we do that in Trino. But we definitely look at that for internal services at Starburst, where we push a lot of our metal to the limit. So sometimes if we were to use OpenTelemetry metrics, we'd probably drop some metrics here and there, which isn't great, because that's dropping those metrics. The metrics that you get when your system's overloaded is some of the most valuable metrics you'll ever get out of that service, right? You'll understand how it fails and how to alert yourself when it's about to fail. And if you don't have that data and you just your system just keels over and it's oh, I don't have any time series. It's hard to figure out if your system's going to keel over again. You don't really know why I did it to begin with. So
yeah, you set yourself up for failure when it matters the most. That's not good.
Exactly. It fails at the worst possible time.
Right.
All right. That's super interesting. So we'll put together a demo for Prometheus and Trino as well in the documentation for OpenMetrics, I hope. So I have to figure out how to do that. That should be good. Very, very interesting. Thank you so much. Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah. I can. There's one more observability component that we ended up adding to Airlift and Trino through Starburst that's kind of handy that we use, which is for all the logging. In which we now have, well, Airlift has supported for a little while JSON logging, but there's these changes allow you to do JSON formatted logs, which makes it a lot easier for FluentD or FluentBit to scrape those logs. It's a pretty simple configuration change. And then I added support for being able to open a TCP socket and stream logs instead of putting them on the file system, which allows you to run FluentBit or FluentD as a sidecar and stream over a TCP socket all of your logs instead of having them hit the file system first, which is just a little bit more.
That's much better for using it in Kubernetes and stuff, right? So
yeah, exactly. I think long term we'll look at like maybe being able to support the events protocol, OpenTelemetry events protocol there, I think.
Crazy, huh, David? Matt always has plans for more stuff.
Funny how the software always gets better.
Yeah. Cool. Cole, anything else you need to understand better? Because I'm like overloaded. My head is like smoking at this stage.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating, and there's always more work to be done and more to learn, right? That's kind of the beauty of these systems. So if people wanted to read more, of course, you can go to the OpenTelemetry website, Trino documentation will have references. Is there anything else, Matt, that you think you'd advise people to go look at if they want to fully understand the weeds of this?
Yeah, the OpenTelemetry website is an excellent starting point. I think that there's a OpenMetrics is a standard. It's like a standard out there for that, which is, that's a little nitty gritty. I don't know if you necessarily need to read that, but I would encourage once all the examples and stuff are up, playing with them, like run Prometheus. You can run Prometheus right now and go scrape your Trino. There's a little bit of work you have to do in the Prometheus config to set the right headers. It's the only kind of gotcha there. On the logging side, I would say take a look at Fluent Bit and the TCP socket input. It's a little bit more, it's a much more efficient and easy way to do logging. Of course, I wouldn't necessarily suggest, you know, using TCP socket logging over any kind of network outside of like the host itself. Like you should generally run it as a sidecar, otherwise you're kind of transmitting those logs over plain text over a network.
Better be a secure network.
Yeah.
The most secure. Yeah. It's there's no bad actors. Nothing to worry about.
I promise I'll work with Matt to get all of this stuff into the docs as well on the Trino side. Open telemetry is already there, as you see, and the other stuff will follow.
Yeah. I apologize. I kind of laid it all on you really quick there, Alfred.
No, it's all good.
Good. We gotta get it in underneath an hour for the Trino community broadcast. So it's the density, information density has to be up there.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think we can round the show out today. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, thank you very much to Matt and David. That was super informative and interesting. I now know about 1,000 times more about this than I did prior to the start of this episode, which is usually the way you want things to go. So I'm thankful for that. And we do both have a good one.
You as well. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Always. So what else do we have to talk about quickly, Cole, before
we got Trino Fest coming up, Manfred.
Yeah, and on the day after, we're going to do a Trino Contributor Congregation as well. It's going to be amazing to meet more geeks like Matt and David and talk shop about what's going on in the Trino development and the Trino community world. So obviously, we'll have lots of sessions at Trino Fest as well, but we're still looking for more speakers, right?
Yes. So if you want to attend, come attend. You can do it live in Boston or virtually. So make sure to register either way. We've got some talks lined up now that are pretty good, but we need more. So if you have built anything cool with Trino, deployed anything cool with Trino, have a story to tell, have a performance improvement to brag about, just some insights or analysis on what makes Trino tick, sign up, submit a talk. We can work with you and we can make sure that you can get that talk going. It's a great way to build up your resume, professionally network, just brag. I mean, bragging's fun, right? Like if you did something cool, you may as well talk about it in a way that benefits the broader community. So it's benevolent as much as it is kind of getting to flex that you're smart. So we love talks and we need more. So make sure you check out the Trino Fest website, submit those. And then also if you want to talk to the maintainers and developers working on Trino, that next day we have the Trino Contributor Congregation. So in Boston, you can do a 2-for-1, kill 2 birds with 1 stone with a trip to that city and, meet everyone that was on this call in person, perhaps as well as more.
Yeah. And also hear that Boston is quite all right in June. So,
oh, it's so nice in June, Manfred. It's one of the nicest weather patterns out there. It's the reason you don't live in Boston is the winter is terrible, but the summer, perfect.
All right. If I go back there, I'm going to have to get that ice cream place again that I found last time. It's going to be the right way to for it, I hope.
I've lived in Boston for a little while, so if anyone needs any local recommendations, I can hook you up.
Well, you're going to be there, so you can drag us around.
Yeah. We've got more Trino Community Broadcast episodes in the works, Manfred.
Yeah. If you go, and I can do that here. In the upcoming episode, so next time on the 4th of April, Istvan is joining us from Mizo, which is a no-code analytics tool that has Trino support, and it looks really, really cool and has some very interesting ideas in it. Should be really interesting to talk to Istvan. He has got really good experience across the analytics space, so with some very novel ideas. That's going to be a great episode. And then on the 24th of April, I'm very proud to have pulled in Java champion and all-around geek and well-known Java hacker, Lucas Eder from Data Geekery, whose project called Juke is enabling you to basically write Java code so you don't have to worry about the SQL underlying stuff. And this now works with Trino as well. So building like type-safe Java code to query a database can be also interesting. And obviously, because Trino is different, because it has support for all these different data sources, there's going to be some interesting discussions on what pains that posed for Juke and like how this works with different catalogs and stuff. And obviously, Lucas is also very, very well-versed in Java. And so any geek that has some questions for him, like Jan probably has some again, jump into the live call and help us grill Lucas. So it's going to be super interesting.
Well, I think that's it from us. Of course, the Trino Definitive Guide now in more languages than ever. And aside from that, I think we'll see you next time. Thank you all for tuning in, whether live or, you know, the 99% of you that tune in after the fact on YouTube. We appreciate your viewership and we'll see you again soon. That's the wrong button. Let me click the right button.